Gail Trotter here, Judicial Crisis Network spokeswoman at Gail Trotter. I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah, that's right. Gail Trotter with two T's on Twitter. Gail, great to have you on. There's a few Supreme Court issues that I want to get your thoughts on. Let's start with the Little Sisters of the Poor case. What was this case and what did the Supreme Court decide yesterday?
Sure. Well, we saw for 7 years that the Little Sisters of the Poor, which is an order of Catholic nuns that takes care of the most vulnerable in our society, the elderly poor, they were challenged first by the Obama administration to violate their conscience. And then the litigation continued once the current administration gave them an exemption from a contraceptive mandate that was put in place by HHS. And then after that relief was given, they were put into litigation by the attorneys general of Pennsylvania and New Jersey. And it was pretty shocking around the world that the United States government would try to force an order of Catholic nuns to violate their conscience. And the cost for this was heavy, heavy fines and penalties if they refused to go along with what the government had decided that they wanted to do. First, the Obama administration, and then these attorneys general of Pennsylvania and New Jersey. So the Supreme Court yesterday decided that the current administration had the authority to grant this exception to the Little Sisters of the Poor and other organizations like theirs. And this was welcome relief to these groups that shouldn't have to violate their conscience to achieve an end of government that can be achieved in a much less offensive way. If the government wants to do that, there are many ways that the government can provide free contraception to women, but it doesn't require forcing nuns to violate their conscience.
So what was the vote in the Supreme Court for this one?
It was 7-2. The main opinion was written by Justice Clarence Thomas. There was a concurring opinion written by Justice Alito that was agreed to by Justice Gorsuch. And unsurprisingly, the two dissenting votes were Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sotomayor.
So what would possibly be the argument that it is constitutional to compel people who devote their lives to a religious set of values to violate those compelled by the state? I'm always troubled by the two. At least it was 7-2. I was afraid you're going to say 5-4, but it's thank goodness is only the two. But what could possibly have been the argument against this one?
Right. Well, it doesn't even make any sense. But if you dig into Ruth Bader Ginsburg's opinion, dissenting opinion on this case, she's essentially saying that it's no burden on the nuns to have to do this because essentially the greater good, the compelling interest of the government in this case is to make sure that women have access to free contraception. And it doesn't make sense even in the context of this case because on briefing to the Supreme Court, the opponents of the nuns couldn't point to a single woman who was unable to obtain contraception due to the nuns not wanting to provide it through their personal health insurance plan. And when Justice Ginsburg goes into her dissenting opinion, she specifically talks about this compelling government interest in providing this. And yet, if you look even like apart from the nuns, the law by the government deals with employed women. So women who don't work, who are at home, are not provided free contraception under this Obamacare law or ACA law. And also women who work for employers that have less than 50 employees, they're not included in this Obamacare law with the contraception mandate. And also many, many health plans, you might remember, were grandfathered by Obamacare, the ACA, and they weren't included in this mandate. So you already have a situation where the government has decided that they're just going for a certain segment of the population. Many employers and plans were granted exemptions, and for less way less important reasons than religious conscience or moral conscience. And so Justice Ginsburg tries to make the argument that it's ridiculous to allow to carve out this exemption for the nuns and people who are similarly situated, employers who are similarly situated. But the facts on the ground don't support that assertion.
Yeah, this is great because also it does still the way that we summed it up at Breitbart or Joel Pollack is that religious freedom is more important than Obamacare, which is great because we're heading, we know, culturally in a direction where the state is gradually superseding the power of faith and religion, despite the First Amendment. And this is a step in the right direction. I think in that regard, and it is heartening to see, and perhaps I'm too cynical that I feel this way, that at least two of the liberals, or if you don't include Justice Roberts all of a sudden, were on the correct side of this. Did you get any sense of the logic of Kagan and Breyer, if they were the two who voted with the Little Sisters of the Poor on this?
Yeah, they had a separate opinion too, so they were agreeing with the rationale of the decision, the ultimate decision, but their logic was not as firm. And I have to say, Justice Alito's concurring opinion really was spot on. He was saying, I don't know if you remember the history of this or not, but there was a Supreme Court decision on religious liberty several years ago. The Congress wasn't happy with the Supreme Court's decision on it, so they passed through the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which was signed by the president at that time, and that provided more statutory support for religious freedom, religious liberty. And Justice Alito's concurring opinion in this case talked about how he would have found that this contraceptive mandate violated the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which is, you know, you have your constitutional violations, then you have your statutory violations. So his rationale on it would have undergirded the Little Sisters' position to, you know, keep their religious conscience clean, even stronger than the opinion that we're talking about, how the liberal justice has even joined the larger opinion, which has done a lot to make sure that you have as much support as possible for essentially the lowest common denominator. So you have a really firm opinion with as many votes as you can muster. But I think this just undergirds the point that we're all trying to get out there, that every single justice's votes count.
Yes.
And it is so critical when we're talking about these very important concerns, like we saw with the Second Amendment. You know, the Supreme Court didn't take up a lot of the issues, laws that were impeding on the Second Amendment in this term. So it is a welcome relief to see in this case, even though the majority opinion doesn't go into the constitutional issue or this Religious Freedom Restoration Act in the sense that it doesn't decide that issue because it doesn't have to decide that issue. It decides on the Administrative Procedure Act that the department did have the authority to create this exemption. It's so important to remember that if the Supreme Court won't take up these issues, then you have all these laws and agency actions that are passed that impinge on our freedoms. And if the Supreme Court doesn't take it up, then, you know, we're kind of out to lunch.
Yeah, very interesting. And I think this is very, very wise words. Did you get any sense of was the left upset with the two liberal judges who did not vote go along with this? Because it just makes me curious because any of this stuff is just so sacrosanct on the left. I'm just curious if there's any sort of backlash for this.
Yes, and I think it was in Alito's opinion that he talks about there's this idea that there's a constitutional right to contraception, to cost-free contraception.
Yeah.
And I think there are many people on the left who would like to enshrine made-up constitutional rights that are nowhere in the text of the Constitution and completely airbrush the constitutional rights that are in the black letter law of the Constitution. So certainly there's outrage on the left. But since the main decision wasn't really decided on this particular issue, but more on an administrative issue, then I think it's not seen as as much caterwauling from the left as we would expect.
Yeah, okay, interesting. So today we are going to figure out if the president can keep his finances a secret. And this is one where people are very worked up about this. I'm seeing even people on the right very intensely interested in what's going to be the story here. From my vantage point, this is another one where it seems like why would a human being's personal finances be public domain? It's frightening to me that this is even being hyped, yet it is being hyped. What am I missing?
I don't think you're missing anything. And I think this just goes back to frequently there are different laws that apply to different representatives of political ideology. And there are passes given to, leaders of a particular presidential or a particular political party and not to the other. And I think when you see these examples, you can always see where the hypocrisy is, because it's not uniform by the left on who they want information about. So I think you're spot on, and it will be very interesting to see how the Supreme Court handles this.
Yeah, I'm curious too. So what is your guess? Is your guess that they're gonna end up siding on Trump's behalf?
I think given Chief Justice John Roberts' effort to try and protect the institution of the Supreme Court, I think he's very hesitant to get into what he sees as political matters. So I think it really comes down to whether, you hope that it comes down on the law. You hope that it comes down on judicial philosophy that recognizes the importance of the separation of powers and the proper role of the judiciary. But I think there's also the idea of, how does it play in terms of the political arena? And Chief Justice John Roberts has certainly indicated through many decisions through his entire term, but particularly recently, that he does not want the Supreme Court to be embroiled in political debates. So I think that's where you have to look. That's the key.
Yeah, interesting. And I guess on this case, if he does not want to get political, I guess he won't. He'll probably side on the side that I'm rooting for. But my audience knows that I'm generally now, I'm officially in the camp. I don't want to see anyone's tax returns anymore. I would love it if everyone paid their full freight in taxes and was incredibly charitable. But I just feel like it's becoming now a politicized invasion of privacy that's going to keep decent people who have a sense of shame and dignity out of public life and out of politics. And that's not a good thing. So that's my political opinion. We will find out later today what the court's opinion is in terms of the law. Gail Trotter, again, is my guest. She's from the Judicial Crisis Network. You can go to gailtrotter.com, at Gail Trotter on social media. Any other legal issues that you think should we discuss? Second Amendment, what's going on there? Gun rights, always under attack. Any thoughts?
Yes, and I think, it's just so critical when you think about what's going on in terms of the social unrest. The Second Amendment has never been more important than it is right now.
Sure.
And as we're going into this election season, you look back at the 2016 election, candidate Trump talked so much about how important it was to protect the Second Amendment. And I think with all the videos that Americans are seeing right now of what's happening around the country, they understand how critical it is. And this Supreme Court declined to take up, I think it was 10 Second Amendment cases in the last month. And if the Supreme Court doesn't protect these constitutional rights, then it's very easy for leftist jurisdictions to continue to chip away at them to the point where they become meaningless. We saw that in the city of Alexandria just this month, that the Commonwealth of Virginia took away some of these state firearm preemption laws, and the city of Alexandria did yet another meaningless gesture to try and limit citizens' rights on the Second Amendment in their jurisdiction. And you're going to see stuff like that's an attack that you're going to see around the country. So it's very important going into the 2020 election to reflect on that. And that was certainly the case in the 2016 election. The majority of voters really cared about these Supreme Court vacancies. And even though, you know, we don't have a vacancy right now, that can happen at any time.
Sure, that can happen at any time. And there's so many possibilities with so many people on the court getting up there in age. You never know. And it just raises the stakes for the election coming up in November. And Gail Trotter, really appreciate it. Judicial Crisis Network spokeswoman, really appreciate the time. Come back soon.
Great to be with you.
We'll be right back.